listening to Fox Sports Radio. This is Straight Outta Vegas. With the voice of Vegas, your host, RJ Bell. The pregame show America has always wanted. I doubt the future. I doubt the future. From the Vegas Strip, here's RJ Bell.
You heard it. I'm RJ live from Las Vegas on a Wednesday. Woo, a lot of NBA, baby. You can feel the page of the sports calendar turning. NBA going to be the focus. A lot of big games last night. We are live from Las Vegas, as we said, in studio. A pro who knows, Steve Fezzik. He's got a take coming up. Cold cash over hot takes? Well, this one's hot, so he must have a lot of money he'd be willing to bet on this one. Sports bettors listen for the money. Sports fans listen to no more than their buddies. But you cannot have pros without Joes. Pros would be working at the fast food place if it wasn't Joes. We appreciate him. He's in L.A. Jonas Knox.
Always good to be here, RJ. And yes, on a day in which we've got a major change in Major League Baseball, more rumors around the NFL and the quarterback carousel, what is the Vegas lead on a Wednesday?
Well, first of all, everyone's worried. You just did, how long did you just, were you just on air?
3 hours.
So we're getting, there's two ways for us to think about that. The show that has you on every day, right? I don't know if you have any loyalty, but I mean, you know, just in general, is it could be you were holding back your best take for today.
Okay.
With Straight Out Vegas, option one. Option two would be that was like a dress rehearsal, and now you've refined your takes. Or option three is, hey, I think Gottlieb's cleared in one big market. We're not, so I'm going to give them all and RJ gets the leftovers.
Or I'm just, I'm trying to say, how can I put this politely? I'm open to any opportunity here. So in some ways you could say I'm easy in that regard.
Well,
so,
I've heard that.
Yes,
I've heard
yeah.
that. The Las Vegas lead is Zion.
That's
Zion.
Right. Zion Williamson, a monster game last night for the New Orleans Pelicans, a 138-117 win for the Pelicans. But the story in that game, Zion in just 28 minutes of play, 31 points, 9 boards, 5 assists, easily his best game so far in his young NBA career.
And we joke sometimes, but we're really not, about hot takes and cold cash. We pride ourselves on the following. We will not say anything that we would not bet. In fact, we have the green button. What's that? Anytime someone says something that's bettable, anybody else can press the green button and it's an automatic cash bet. So when I say stuff, when Fez says it, when any of us say it, it's a fact. And this is what I'll say here. Zion, my optimism, I think reasonable optimism, meaning from fans, the sky's the limit. I feel better today about Zion's potential with the caveat injuries, right? People don't get injured every game, right? So if you get injured every 30 games, that's a problem. We haven't had enough games with Zion to see if the injury concern is still a major concern. With that caveat, you've got to be more enthused, optimistic about Zion today than you were a week ago, than you were at any point up till now. This is the pinnacle, so far, of Zion optimism. Does anyone disagree with that?
No.
No.
All right. Now, here's the clarification, or here's the nuance. We have no idea how Zion is going to play with this Pelicans team. And we've got some data that says even though he's played very well, the team hasn't. So the day before, Zion played his first game. 538 does playoff projections. Very complex, because it's not just how many games is this team going to win, it's how many games the other teams are going to win. It's very well regarded. The chance of the Pelicans making the playoffs before Zion played a game, 62%. The chance today, 50%. The Pelicans' chances have decreased since Zion took the court. Chances to make the playoffs for the Pelicans down with Zion. Now, is it all Zion's fault? No, Zion's playing really well. If you look at his stats, 21 points a game, 8 rebounds. He had 31 last night. He's good. How's he playing with his team? Maybe what you would expect, because if you look at the projected wins, they've won about the games they were expected to win. Now, Memphis, who is one of their competition for that 8th seed, they've won more. So Memphis has over-exceeded expectations. The Pelicans team have just barely met expectations, even though Zion's playing really well. I don't know if this continues. It's a small sample size, but he's not seemingly integrating in a super effective way with his Pelicans teammates. And Fez, Memphis, you know, there's a little bit of interest in the fact that Memphis is that other team.
Yeah, because Ja Morant is having a tremendous year and, in fact, is the likely Rookie of the Year winner, not Zion. And here he's under the radar. Memphis has gone 7-3 under his leadership.
So some suit upstairs said, lead the show with Zion. No, I decided, lead the show with Zion. You're saying, no. Memphis got a player that's better, perhaps, or at least he's looking to win the Rookie of the Year, most likely. And they're playing better.
And he's making all his teammates play better, distributing the ball.
So, Jonas, I was thinking maybe what we can start doing is have you give your take on the Vegas take. Do you agree Zion individually great, but as contribution to the team so far, still an open question?
I agree. It's a young team. They're incorporating a lot of new faces all at the same time. You know, they made the big trade with Anthony Davis, so they're bringing in a bunch of new guys trying to fit him into the offense, guys that are trying to revitalize their own careers, Ingram, Lonzo Ball, and then on top of it, partway through the season, when you're playing somewhat well, you bring in your number one draft pick, Zion Williamson. It feels like it's a lot of guys trying to establish themselves at the same time, and because of that, maybe it's a detriment more than it is a help.
Now, you're saying something interesting. This is fascinating, because my first thought was, what are you talking about? We're 40-some games in. But you're saying, hey, if you start the season with a lot of disruption where you need to really try to solidify the team, then you finally start getting solidified, game 30, game 20, whatever, and now you throw another wild card in
there.
We know it's hard to integrate any one player into any team. You're saying if the team is like some kind of cake batter, it was just barely cooked enough to eat it.
Right.
And then you just threw in a big Zion size frosting, and now and it's all kind of gooey.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of new faces. And that's what it is. There's a lot of new faces on that team, guys that are all trying to get theirs. Like, Brandon Ingram was sent out of town. You don't think he's pissed off looking at Kyle Kuzma, thinking, wait, they chose
that,
him
that
over
kind
me?
Of stuff, that's supposed to motivate.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
you're supposed
of course.
To play better because I think to me, you got a good point, but I think we might be mixing them up. The point about coming together as a team, I think, is great. The point about, oh, these are out or off cast, people cast away, and that, if anything, that should motivate them, right?
And right as you're about to find your stride, then you add in somebody else.
Exactly. I think that's a good point. I really do. Now, last thing. I do have my limits. In the pre-production meeting, Fezzik said, you know, I was looking. Do you think Zion's losing some weight? And I said, you know, I'm willing to do a lot for winning, but I'm not going to be like tracking like Us Magazine Zion's way. So just know that. Keep that to yourself.
Will do.
And your Twitter account will probably have the weights of various players and your critiques, right?
Yeah. Didn't we bet on a Golden State player's weight before the year started?
Well, we were betting on him ballooning up. Draymond. By the way, you can follow Fez on Twitter at Fezzik Sports, F-E-Z-Z-I-K.
By the way, a rabid fan base is going to be very upset with Steve Fezzik coming up here in just one moment. Do want to let you know we are brought to you by AutoZone. AutoZone has the free services you need to help you get back on the road, like their free AutoZone Fix Finder service. With over 5,600 locations nationwide, AutoZone is here to help you save time and money with their free services. Getting the job done just got easier. Restrictions apply. Get in the zone. AutoZone.
You know something, Jonas? Let's do this. Let's jump to Boston Rockets, because Fez on that Philadelphia game has maybe the hottest take ever. We want to make sure we have a time to let it breathe. We'll do that, right? We'll do the Boston Rockets first.
Yeah, and the small ball Rockets did impress yet again, a 116-105 final over the Boston Celtics on Tuesday night.
All right, this is, you know, one of the things I'm enjoying about this show is I have to do the kind of quality show I want. I have to have a research team. And today, last couple of days, they've been stepping it up. I look at this and I think, okay, it's the NBA. Rockets were at home. I'm thinking a little bit about Fez and how we disagreed about the Rockets when Anthony Davis put up 32 last week and he said that was a disappointing game because the Rockets were like an eighth grade team, you know. And I smiled a little bit and all that. But as we dug in, this is an amazing stat about fundamentally how the Rockets are playing differently than they were before. And it's not small ball. Westbrook, in the 10 games prior to this Boston game last night, had scored 234 points in the paint. So 10 games, so 23 points plus a game in the point, in the paint. In the paint, not 23 points per game, in the paint only. Shaq in the modern era is the only other player to do that. The two players in the modern era, not Embiid, not Shaq and Westbrook, in the paint, over 23 points a game, over 10 games. Last night, Westbrook had more points in the paint, 24. So he, in the 11th game, he picked up the pace of this historic pace in the paint for points. I did not practice that. In the paint for points. I mean, Jonas, it's almost incomprehensible.
He goes 100.
He's a guard.
He goes 100 miles an hour, and he's almost daring somebody to get in the way. It's fun to watch. It's a different approach, but yeah, it's
especially
crazy.
Let's be honest. We sit here whining. I don't whine. You guys kind of do, but we sit here lamenting. Why aren't they playing like Joe DiMaggio, which I was born in 1970. I have no idea, right? Old school. Westbrook's is old school. Westbrook's more old school than anyone from the old school.
It's why I like watching Zion play, because in this day and age...
Oh, come on. Zion's played 8 games.
But this day and age, when everybody stands behind the arc and wants to shoot threes, you got two guys that are attacking the basket at all times. It's fun to watch.
No, I agree with that part. The question with Zion is, can he survive that? Westbrook's proven it. Imagine Westbrook playing like in the 70s.
Oh, God.
Like the great line from Hank Kingsley on Larry Sanders was his agent wasn't from the old school. He's from the school they tore down to build the old school.
Hey, now.
I love that one. So, Fez, if he's scoring so much in the paint and the Rockets are playing fundamentally differently, it must be coming from the three-pointers, where if you look at his three-point attempts.
Yeah, because Westbrook's always struggled from threes, and he was taking too many of them. Frankly, prior to New Year's, he was shooting 5 per game. Since New Year's, Westbrook's only trying 2.5.
So 5 per game, I heard. What was the other one?
Yeah, since New Year's, he's only trying 2.5.
So 2.5.
His three-point attempts have effectively gone down by 50% since New Year's.
Effectively gone down? They've been cut in half.
Yes.
You know what's funny? No wonder he got into Northwestern. I mean, all he had to say was Westbrook had 5 before. He has less than half now. Instead, effectively, he's doing count, and then he's going. Blah, 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 blah. So just let's try it one more time. Do it this way. Is just redo that one. But I'll give you a hint. Right? Let's act like no one's listening. Let's act like no one's listening. Westbrook used to try five threes a game. Now he's trying less than half. Go.
Westbrook used to try 5 three-pointers per game, and now he's trying half as much.
Still didn't really work, did it?
Well, he's got a flair for the dramatic. He needs to add a little bit of spice to things.
I think he's trying to add. You know, my producer just said it's an insurance executive's voice. Yeah, a guy I would not sign an insurance contract with. Let's just say, I'd want him being my guy that's giving insurance to people. Hey, that's what's beautiful about this. And really, America, Fezzik in some countries would be an outcast. He might be dead by now, but you know, like executed because he did something to try to hustle someone. Not that he does that anymore, but, you know, literally in America, he thrives. And the beauty is we can somehow jump on his back Let him deal with all that, and we just benefit with his picks.
Yeah.
Boy, I thought that was an impressive pick you had on that XFL. I mean, we were getting points at home. What was the final?
New York Guardians won 23-3 against the Tampa Bay Vipers.
You keep doing that, you'll be fine. It doesn't matter how you – if you don't do that, I don't know.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and the iHeartRadio app.
I'm RJ Bell. We are Straight Out of Vegas.
And I'm Jonas Knox, voice of You, the Fan. Coming up here in just a couple of moments, we have a curious number attached to two teams in the NBA.
Plus, as we said, Fez's hottest take ever. It's sizzling about the Sixers. Thanks for joining us. You're listening to the fastest growing show on Fox Sports Radio. Our audience has over doubled. Double plus, we'll call it. Thank you so much. In the last year, you can listen 5 days a week. 6 o'clock Eastern, 200-plus Fox Sports Radio stations. Also, iHeartRadio app, foxsportsradio.com. Hey, SiriusXM, anytime on demand, too, on podcast, just search RJ Bell. Right now on the Strip, 60 degrees, the neon is pumping.
So, RJ, we were discussing the new-look Houston Rockets and their win over the Boston Celtics on Tuesday night and the impressive performances of not only Russell Westbrook but also James Harden.
Yeah, and great information about how the Rockets are fundamentally playing a different game. Westbrook taking half the three-pointers that he had been before January 1. And he's scoring in the paint at a historic pace, over 23 points per game in the paint alone. Last 11, he had kept pace, if not a little bit more, last night. Now, Fez, you really were down on this Rockets team. Woo. I mean, I didn't know if you and Daryl Morey had a, I didn't know if it was personal, whatever. I know it's about cash for you. It's been about a week. How have you reevaluated?
The Rockets Munchkin lineup appears to be working so far. I'm surprised, RJ.
So you're, but now that we've seen Westbrook going inside, taking away one of his main weakness, all those threes he was shooting when he wasn't shooting effectively, makes sense, right?
It does, and you don't have Capella clogging up the middle anymore. The middle is open.
You know, I was often saying, trade Wilt Chamberlain, don't clog up the middle, whatever you do. Moses Malone, forget about him. Now, I am going to prove I was right. I mean, oftentimes in life, you can't really prove when you're right. Even if I said, I think Kansas City's going to win the Super Bowl, which I did, maybe they weren't the best team, right? So it went that way, but no, if I was saying they would win the Super Bowl, I was right. If I was saying Kansas City's the best team, we don't know. Because Super Bowl winner's not always the best team. That's what makes gambling so tough. You don't even have the answer when you think you have the answer. But I think we have the answer here. Now, let's go through quickly. What we know for a fact is entering last night's game, the Rockets were 7-1 to win the West. 7-1 to win the West. Boston was 7-1 to win the East. So the exact same. 100 wins you 700. Boston in their conference. Houston in theirs. Now, the market last night said Boston was the better team. Why? Houston was only a small favorite at home. They weren't a big enough favorite. They were saying Boston, better team. Agree or disagree?
Agree.
Now, in your power rankings, where do you have Boston?
So I've got Boston in my Fez power ratings as the number 4 team.
Houston?
Not as good. Houston, the number 7 team.
Excellent. So it makes sense. The line looked right last night then, right?
Yes.
Now, if we look at the West and the East, because the question is 7-1 to win the West for Houston and the same odds for Boston to win the East. Which conference is better, the East or the West? Or another way to say it is, which conference would be harder to win?
Oh, the West is much harder to win.
West is harder to win. So you got the... Wait, hold on a second. You think Houston's the lesser team, and they're in the harder conference, but they have a 7-1. Boston is the better team in the easier conference. They're 7-1.
What's going on here, RJ?
I'm asking you.
Well, what's going on is that Houston has extreme variance. This team has a high ceiling in terms of what they might be able to do.
You recall anyone saying that?
You did.
And it seems like that the market's agreeing, Jonas, is, hey, how good is Houston going to be game to game? I don't know, about the same they were with Capella. Maybe even a smidge down, though I don't think so. But if somehow they get lucky, if somehow they get hot, not just threes, but if their style of play somehow congeals in a positive way, they do have a higher ceiling than the Celtics, and the market agrees.
And so they do pose a threat because they do it differently than everybody else.
Yeah, I think that's the way to think about it, is you could see this team. And plus, if you shoot a lot of threes to start with, you're higher variance, right? Because you can get hot on those threes. We've seen that in college, right? If there's a college team that's a 20-point dog, they have a much better chance in college basketball to win if they shoot a bunch of threes. If you play the same old game, as Fez says, Mott's, more of the same is bad if your opponent is better. You want to disrupt things, and Houston, at best, is the third best team in the West.
You know, RJ, it's been an up-and-down season for the Philadelphia 76ers, but here they are minding their own business. They've won three straight. They take care of the Clippers last night, 110-103. You would think that people would be feeling better about this team, but unfortunately, Hurricane Steve Fezzik blew into town, and we got a problem.
Well, listen.
The win last night by Philly, borderline meaningless, RJ.
What?
Philly won a game. Guess what? That's what they do at home. They're 25-2 at home. Here's a team that can win at home. Let me see them win a key game on the road where they're 9-19 straight up. When they get hit with adversity, this team crumbles like 3-day-old cake.
Did you prepare that?
Yes.
All right. I saw him going through his pockets pulling out napkins. I didn't know what that was about. All right. I agree with him. Because let's look. I mean, first of all, Steve Fezzik said that. I'm RJ Bell. We're straight out of Vegas. But let's look at the numbers. At home, Philadelphia, 25-2. On the road, 9-19. If you look at those road games, the average Vegas spread was pick 'em, which means they should have won half of them. Yeah, if you were supposed to win half, 50% chance to win one game, 50% to win half of them, or half of them is what you're supposed to win. So against the spread, they're 9-19. So if you're 9-19 when you're supposed to win half the time, there's a problem. What do road games reveal? Discipline, organization by the organization. Are they organized? That's a great way to think about it. Organization, what organization for the Sixers? And ability to deal with adversity. I would go one step further. If you're a Sixers fan and you met for lunch with another Sixers fan every Wednesday morning, you should be less optimistic this Wednesday than last Wednesday. Because this win does mean something. They played well at home like they typically do. They beat maybe the best team in the NBA. But they do that. They get motivated, the Sixers do, for the biggest games. They play well at home. But what about a Tuesday night in Portland? How do you play? That's where the Sixers suffer. And to me, that Wednesday breakfast powwow, with all the stuff with Embiid and social media, I think net-net this is a down-arrow week for the Sixers. Fez said it a little hotter than me, but what do you think, Jones?
Yeah, I would agree. Until they prove it on the road and they're not a high enough seed to where they can guarantee they're going to get several home games in the postseason, until they prove it on the road, I think it's still up in the air. They remind me a lot of last year's Celtics teams. A lot of noise, a lot of bickering. Even Al Horford, who was on that team last year in Boston, said, we got issues in the locker room here. It just feels like it's not going to end well for the Sixers this season.
And I would say this, to whatever degree the analogy to last year's Boston team is true, and I hadn't thought of that. I think it's a good one. It's worse with the Sixers. Because if you have a disruptive relationship, environment, whatever, and it's new, there's a chance it's not the truth. Someone's getting a divorce, someone's doing whatever, and once things settle down, it'll be okay. We've got years and years with these Sixers. This is the reality. You could have hoped last year with Boston it'd get better. this is the reality in Philadelphia. The idea that Embiid's going to change, Simmons is going to change, just seems less likely. And you could say every passing day. I think that day passed a year or two ago. This is the reality for Philadelphia, which means some real highs, but no real big playoff wins. Now, Jonas is very competitive. So just in 1 minute, he's going to say, I'm going to come, not as strong as Fez, but I want people to remember me today. He has me with Jonas sometime.
Straight out of Vegas!
Be sure to catch live editions of Straight Out of Vegas weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific.
You know, it'd be easy to be kind of snarky and listening to that Ohio State story and saying, oh, now we know what it is you need to do to get kicked off the team. But to me, this kind of makes sense because in general, I would say, if you're just accused of something, why are you being penalized before? But I kind of get the point that even if it's not, you know, and who knows, I have no insight, but if eventually in a criminal matter, it's not a criminal act that was done, but it was still things that Ohio State wouldn't like, you kind of get it. But schools are so hypocritical with that stuff. You always are going to be skeptical of it. Speaking of skeptical, I was looking here, Philadelphia Inquirer, this is what Coach Brown, we were talking about the Sixers and how Fez said very strong that Sixers should not have any optimism off of last night's game. Does borderline meaningless. The Coach Brown said he will use the 9-day gap between games to figure out how to coach his team. He said this team is not traditional. How long's he been coach?
Quite a while.
Yes.
Yeah, quite
all right,
a while.
So listen, it's Jonas time. We got a little theme music when Jonas has, he makes a point about his take.
Pay attention to me. Yeah, me. Nobody else, just me. Me, me, me. Me.
Go ahead, Jonas.
That was me during the break. I can't believe you guys caught that. Major League Baseball, I don't get this, and if I were a manager in Major League Baseball, I'd be pissed off about it. So they announced a short time ago, a couple hours ago, that the official rules have been amended. This according to MLB.com. They are requiring starting or any relief pitcher to pitch a minimum three batters. That includes the batter, then at bat, or any substitute batter until the batters are out or reach base. So what they're saying is, and this is going to become effective on Thursday, March 12th at the start of spring training coming up here in exactly a month from now. What they're telling you is when you're out there, you have to face a minimum of three batters. No more of these pitching changes, no more of this and that. To me, if I were a manager, like I said, I'd be bothered by it because you're telling me and dictating to me how I have to work my bullpen when we've seen that's been the secret to success outside of banging trash cans to winning World Series. You match up in postseason games, you match up late in games, and they're taking that away from managers.
I could not agree more. In fact, if I knew baseball as a true expert, which admittingly I don't, I'm a fan. I was a big fan as a kid. I bet baseball, but I leverage other people. So let me just admit I'm not an expert and tell me something. I hate rule changes that fundamentally change the game. Meaning, you want to go from 7 innings to 9 innings or vice versa? Okay, it's the same game. It's just a little less long. But each play, it's the same game, right? But if you make it where, you know, you want to make the pitching mound a little higher, a little lower, this is saying everything that came before it,
yep,
the way that you compiled your teams, like you can't change the rules in a way that the decisions you a team made 3 years ago are now bad because of a rules change. And, well, I mean, I hate it.
Yeah.
And here's the question. Well, Fez, you got something on this.
Yeah, almost every MLB team has a left-handed pitcher specialist, and his specialty is to get out left-handed hitters. So now that guy is obsolete. You bring him in, he can't get right-handers out, and boom, he's got to face three pinch-hitting right-handers.
And I don't mind the fact that, I mean, in any industry, things change in a way that an individual might suffer for, because no matter what you do, because in theory, the guy's that lose the job that are the lefty specialists are the same. There's going to be an equal number of players that wouldn't be in the league that can't. But I'm talking about teams making strategic decisions, and you're saying, oh, by the way, all those assumptions, they're fundamentally wrong now. But baseball, it seems like maybe doesn't understand what makes it special. And in many ways, it's not special anymore, meaning it doesn't get the ratings of football. It's not America's true pastime anymore. But holding on to its past, its connection to its past, is one of its greatest attributes, baseball. And with the PED scandals, they destroyed a big chunk of that. 60, 61, 714, Hank Aaron, 755, yeah. And, I mean, 3,000 hits, all of the 500 home runs. What could I rather? I mean, again, this was when I was a kid, I was reading the record books, sporting news record books. Now none of that matters. And now they're saying we're going to why don't, Jonas, you understand this, baseball, probably better, or certainly better than me. Why not just make it you can't leave the freaking batter's box? Like, literally, you step into the batter's box, pitcher can't go off the mound. That's it. Once there's a certain point, the pitcher's on the mound, the batter's in the batter's box, there will be a pitch thrown.
Yeah, to speed the game up. Correct.
Yeah. I mean, if that's what we're doing here, why not do that?
How about if there's an outfield out or there's a ground ball in the infield and you throw over to first, we don't go around the horn to make sure everybody touches the baseball and then back to the pitcher. Like, you can cut out time there. This idea that, and here's where there's going to be a problem, because baseball, especially of all the leagues, that's the one league, and it's been proven over time, and it was proven this offseason, where teams, if they can find a way to cut corners, they're going to cut corners. And it's happened throughout the...
Financially.
Yeah, not even just financially, just on the field. If they got to bang trash cans, steal a sign, scuff up a baseball, like whatever the case may be, they're going to cut corners, and they're going to take... If they need to cheat a little bit, it's going to happen.
Okay, I understand.
So here's why I bring that up. So what they're saying in this rule is that unless the substitute pitcher sustains an injury or an illness, which, in the umpire crew chief's judgment, incapacitates him from further play as a pitcher. So you know what's going to happen. Guys are going to fake injuries.
Well, if that's the case, you make those rules simple. You say if you have to leave cause of injury, you miss the next game no matter what.
I mean.
And then it would take care of it. But to me, the one thing that would change all of this, because I like the idea a batter might be feeling a little uncomfortable, and then it gets exciting. Say, hey, tough, or the pitcher feels a little uncomfortable. And if you want to step off the mound, it's fine. It's a ball or a strike based on if the batter steps out, it's a strike. If the pitcher does, it's a ball. So if you really feel bad, you step away and accept that, there's an additional ball for the pitcher.
Great idea.
I mean, and then this all changes. You can have it, baseball, but just so I don't have to watch these goofy games. I'm giving it away for free.